Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's right. I'm on the air. Oh, goodness. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is your boy, Jim Green. And tonight is the night we get to discuss another aspect of the First Ladies. Before I delve into this thing, let's just do me a favor. Spread the word of Real Talk through social media, blogs, forums. Spread that around. Let your friends and let your coworkers know that this is on the air right now, live tonight on Real Talk with Jim Green. Now, of course, if you're expecting an intro, I'm not going to have that tonight. Not that I have any problem with any intros here, that we got an audio clip section here in the studio board, but I feel like a little change of pace couldn't hurt. Now, with that out of the way, now, tonight's discussion will be on Chapter 1 of Dr. Watson's The President's Wives. This is a book that he wrote that documents the evolution of, well, the ladyship, the first ladyship of the United States in the White House. And for those of you who don't know who Dr. Watson is, Robert P. Watson is a professor, author, frequent media commentator, former candidate for the House of Representatives and on the federal level. Of course, he's got a PhD in public policy from Florida Atlantic University in 1991. Before then, he went to receive a bachelor's degree from Virginia Tech in 1985. I mean, he went to schools in Hershey, where he was an all-star athlete in several sports and earned an athletic scholarship to Virginia Tech, where he played football and track. He's an author and editor of 36 books on topics in American politics and history, 3 novels, has published hundreds of scholarly articles, book chapters, essays, and newspaper editorials. He's also part of the media outlets, frequently a media commentator. You might find him in TV, radio, print outlets, including CNN, ABC, MSNBC, Fox News, New York Times, USA Today, so many others you can come up with top of your head or something. And, you know, he has served on the boards of many academic journals and presidential foundations, such as the Harry S. Truman Foundation and the Western Social Science Association. You know, he's the real deal, you know, the author, Dr. Watson. He's the real deal. He's like a quote-unquote scholar on the subject of First Ladies, besides politics itself. American history, American culture, you name it. I mean, he can answer questions related to those subjects. So, now, before I go here... Now, Chapter 1 is something I'll focus on tonight as we get to the nitty-gritty within the next few weeks, you know, delving into different factors relating to, you know, the First Ladies. And that's going to be a part of our framework. What we're going to discuss is not only the external factors like the Constitution, the laws, legal norms, social trends, especially for women. Culture and history, prevailing public opinion, media and technologies, and politics, gender issues on the agenda, crisis and events that create opportunities for First Lady activism, plus the electoral calendar. We'll also look inside on what's inside, like internal factors, personality of a First Lady, the priorities like whether they're wives, mothers, or their roles as First Lady. Like the view of the job or roles, issue interests, career, training, expertise, skills, health, self-help system, and even learning from mistakes and missteps. Of course, as stated in the description of this episode, there's going to be constant allusion to, you know, partnership. Like the president's preferences for, firstly, he wrote, the state of a marriage relationship, and, of course, the popularity of a president. And I'm sure that plenty of people are going to say, hey, Donald Trump has the lowest popular rating since taking office. Just because he has a low popular rating does not mean that he isn't doing the right thing. I mean, he signed executive orders to get the United States out of the UN and a TPP trade agreement with Asian countries, plus made it easier for us to deal with Obamacare until we replace it. And of course, I don't deny the fact that Ivanka Trump, I mean, is possibly the next lady in line to fill in the role of first lady, since Melania expressed disinterest, unless it was some critic who pointed that out. Anyways, of course, we're going to discuss that while we discuss what's inside the book. Okay? This is President's Wives, second edition, and this is based on a first edition, which it has a good start, but it's not really like you have much to discuss, because you're still gathering information based on, like, things change over time. I could go on and on about this, but we got to cover this tonight. And, of course, let's take a look at the foreword, shall we? If you have a book like that, then I suggest you read along. But for those of you who don't have it, don't worry. This broadcast will be secondary, source, or primary. But I'll discuss the differences between primary and secondary sources in the next broadcast or so. Now, foreword here is statements that are written by someone other than the author, okay? Now, it's a piece of writing that's sometimes placed at the beginning of a book, typically written by someone other than the author. It often tells of some interaction between a writer of a foreword and a book's primary author, or the story the book tells. Now, the thing is, folks, if you actually read that, and I'll tell you something, I'm trying to gather my thoughts as I read through, skim through the chapters, coming up with some summarization. Yeah, it's one interesting piece of information. What we got here is that, my mind is going fast, so I had to pick which information I need for this. Sorry if I waste a few seconds here. Now, aside from praising Dr. Watson, Clifton Daniel, on paragraph 10 of the book, he states that the learning objectives for Watson's book, when you're done, you'll have a very good understanding, not only of the role of the First Lady, but also of how the First Ladies themselves saw the job, how we see them, the unique place they hold in the history of both the United States and the world. I have to agree with Clifton on this one, because this is like one of the primary objectives of this book, is to introduce an idea of First Ladies, like the change that comes with time as to how first ladies function. Now, their responsibilities and tradition doesn't necessarily change, but the way they carry out the practice does. Now, about the preface. I mean, Watson provides a preview of first lady studies as a field of study, comparing his assessment of this academic subfield in the first edition and this new edition. Of course, some of the things you'll find in his interview with C-SPAN may, to some extent, be different, and to some extent, similar to what the second edition is saying. So I provide a link down here on the description. You could check it out anytime. And, of course, it'll be important as we try, study about the first slate. So, yeah. And of course, once we let that sink in, let's go ahead and devote the next 20 minutes or less toward chapter one, which is behind every successful man. Now, I'm not going to read the entirety of the book because of, well, besides the copyright things and trademarks, whatever, but it's because, you know, there's highlights of chapters and the timing of the show. Unless we get a premium, then I won't analyze in depth as much as I want. This show, this broadcast typically lasts 30 minutes, 30, 45 minutes. I mean, I'm including the after show, which is 45 minutes. Now, of course, note the word power in a section of Power Behind the Throne, in the subtitle. Dr. Watson is asserting that First Ladies are and have been powerful. You might want to ask yourself some of these questions if you're reading this part of a chapter. Are what kinds of power? Do these examples illustrate, and just how powerful were these First Ladies? Did they just try to be influential, or did they make a substantial difference through their actions? Given these examples, like, how far behind the throne or behind the scenes were the First Ladies' actions? I mean, who beyond the president was aware of their actions and influence? Now, Florence Harding quotes that you may find in this chapter, you got to think, what evidence does it provide? And what do they mean? Plus, how do they relate to the theme of this section? Power. I mean, power is something that First Ladies have that allows them to make their own decisions. Talk about independent, huh? Of course, they're not always that. The stereotype of China doll or submissive lady. Now, okay, now getting back to the chapter here, like if you're looking at Edith Wilson as an example of a power firstly, think about this. What do we know about the amount and the kind of power she exercised? What lessons should we, and also firstly, learn from the reactions to Edith's use or misuse of power? I mean, this is the first example in that book of role transgression, which is an idea that you might find in the rest of the broadcasts of this series. Notice the point that Watson makes about what we think we know about Woodrow Wilson's personality based on his public behavior and how different the president's relationship was with Edith. Now, there are so many questions from these sections. The rest is, of course, they'll be for research purposes. So you got to look it up on Google or anything if you have those kinds of questions. Now, as for section two, which is about the new view of presidents' wives, you know, in times past, academic scholars didn't take the concept of the first ladyship seriously other than the president of the United States, as though this is implicitly a male-dominated role. Now, let me see. Academic researchers in various disciplines who write about first ladies typically are scholars. Now, of course, that Watson makes a case in section 3, which is about public figures. He makes a case that first ladies are worthy of academic study plus a public notice. If you know more about a first lady presidential candidate's spouse, I mean, you and all the voters across the country can be enlightened about their husbands as candidates and presidents. And if you think there's other first ladies of other countries, you're right. Think about the roles each of these women undertook in variations among them. As for the title of first lady, Dr. Watson gives a complete and detailed review of the titles that we will use for the president's wives since the first presidency. You can also look that up. Watson explores possible alternatives to replace a modernized first lady, like presidential partner, for example. Of course, there may be a possibility of having a first male presidential spouse in case a woman is elected president. Sorry if you don't want Donald Trump, but Hillary lost, by Electoral College. So we won't suspend someone like that until, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, 2020 elections or whatnot. Anyways, first ladies do have a role in this country despite having a history of not being taken seriously. Dr. Watson surveys demographic patterns among first ladies. This information is used to later group and compare types of first ladies. I mean, this section in Service to Our Country details deaths of first ladies and divorces. If you look at that page 15 on the box that says presidential marriage, you'll see the number of years a president and first lady were married prior to taking office. This is useful information about developing presidential partnerships. The length of time the pair were here, where he married before taking office, could be an important variable. Plus, he explains the financial other benefits associated with being a first lady, like pensions first ladies now receive and how that benefit came about. You could say it at least the 20th century. Watson explains the franking privilege available to first ladies and Secret Service protection for them and their families. And when you're finished reading the chapter, Watson gives a detailed example of Martha Washington as an influential figure in a partnership relationship with George Washington, who I dare say is one of the greatest presidents we have. Spend a few minutes building these details into an idea of what partnership means and what powerful or influential first lady means, with the concept of power in mind. That's basically the book here, the entirety of it. But, you know, keep these thoughts in mind. Come up with questions related to that as we go forward with the broadcast. Now, what I like to do is to compare what Dr. Watson said here in this book, the latest edition, to what he said in that interview with C-SPAN, which I'm going to say is going to be the focus of tonight, all right? Now, considering the first edition of Dr. Watson's book, which is The President's Wives, there are similarities and differences between what Watson said in his C-SPAN interview in the second edition of that book. One similarity detected in both sources is that they explore history and the development of position of first lady. Throughout American history, the office of the first lady transformed from being a position of royalty to one that is adaptable to an ever-changing reality. First ladies have been known to be involved in the political affairs of the United States, which also involves taking over for the president. One example that I quoted during my highlighting of the chapter one is Edith Wilson. After World War I, she discouraged her husband from resigning and not only supported him morally and physically, but also carried out many of the tasks of the presidency during his long, slow cavalcade. She helped maintain the privacy of herself and her husband while working to protect America and its allies from domestic and foreign threats. Now, one difference that's prevalent is that the interview did not cover the history of the use of the term first lady. Let me explain why. Different names are attributed to the first lady, and none of them are static. The points of origin are of a wide variety as historians formulate competing theories. Over time, as more of modern reality unfolds, the office of a first lady would have to be reevaluated in depth because a presidential couple might be something other than a heterosexual or generally married. Like I said, certain names for a presidential partner is recommended for future adoption. And I wouldn't be surprised if some woman, whether it's a liberal or conservative, be elected. That, to me, would make history, all right? That would mean that we would have the first gentleman rather than the first lady, right? Right? Thought so. Now, analytical concepts have been brought up by Dr. Watts. One of such concepts is pet project. These are projects that a person cares about or is actively involved in. Each first lady has some pet project at any point in American history. Since the 1800s, first ladies participate in more social causes than at any other time in American history. That includes education and health care. Examples of first ladies conducting their pet projects range from Barbara Bush, advocating family literacy, to Lady Bird Johnson, advocating beautification, or today, what we would more appropriately call conservation. First ladies have the ability to conduct activities outside the office of a first lady, and these activities dispel stereotypes associated with wives of powerful leaders, including being preoccupied inside a building or being submissive to their husbands. Now, I'm sorry for those of you in the Middle East listening to this, including Kuwait, but this is America right there. I'm not ashamed of, you know, first lady position itself, but the stereotypes is what I'm ashamed of. Now, another analytical concept introduced in the discussion of first ladies is pillow influence. This is a type of influence that enacts change through an intimate role by a person in an interaction. Now, depending on the first lady, she would talk about matters with others in a manner that suggests composure, calm, collected. First ladies tend to love their husbands like any other married couple. Whenever one married partner needs help, the other partner in the relationship would support that person. Thus, first ladies adopt a role that transcends even that of a chief of staff or the president's most senior aides and advisors. This is one of many aspects of a first ladyship that has an important significance in American history because of how people perceive her. And another one I found is somewhat familiar to most people in connotation is the public fishbowl. I mean, that's not a literal fishbowl as it is used to describe the White House, okay? The privacy is not an option when a person lives in the White House as everyone watches your every move. A first lady is not exempt from this concept, as one false move would cause a person to be exposed. First ladies have to uphold ethical and legal standards as to their conduct and behavior. As the Hillary Clinton example indicates, if a first lady gets involved in more than one activity, there's a risk of conflict of interest that could blow up on the president. There would have to be a mechanism in place so that, for example, a first lady, the president of the United States, or both of them, to pursue a living without inviting corruption simultaneously. Something that won't compromise their leadership styles or their roles, their specific obligations or duties as to their offices. I very much like corruption to end. And I'm sure Donald Trump wants that to end as well. How do you think he got to, say, drain the swamp? I mean, we got to, somehow. I don't care if someone's a Republican or a Democrat, liberal or conservative. Now, as far as this, if I was to call through the C-SPAN interview at the time of that interview, I would have said the following, all right? Any of these questions were to apply here, all right? I would say, first, Nancy Reagan is known to support her husband, Ronald, throughout his 2 terms as president of the United States. She hardly opposes his worldview in matters like politics. What factors led to Nancy Reagan defending her husband from prosecution, knowing that the Iran-Contra scandal nearly tarnished his presidency? If that's not specific to the themes of the book I've skimmed through and read, plus the interview and the general topic of first ladies, here's an alternative question here. Out of any first ladies in American history, Nancy Reagan managed to find a balance between being traditional and being politically involved. How does her style as First Lady affect her successors over time? Feel free to answer those questions if you like. Like, either in the manner of Dr. Watson when you watch that interview, or in your own way. I mean, feel free to answer this question as this is a broadcast dedicated to the first chapter in the Watson interview. Now, let's see. We don't get too many callers here, and we're about to go into the after show. So give us a call, and it's 347-855-8578. That's the number to call here. Again, that's 347-855-78. And let's see what we got here. Oh, we got a caller here tonight. And let's see. Wait, I think I recognize this caller. So I'm going to put him on the horn here. Feel free to answer the questions or whatnot when you call, or if you want to discuss something about First Lady, or you got something else that requires my attention immediately, like some important news or whatnot, then just give me a call, and let's pick up 973. You're on the air.
Well, my favorite First Lady is your underwear. This is Uncle Barney. Feel the boing, Jacob. Feel the boing. Take your underwears off. Just do the favor. Just do it for the world's sake.
Oh, wait, Bernie Sanders. Dadgummit, man. Why did you call on this broadcast? I mean, jeez, man. I know you lost to Donald Trump. No, you haven't been nominated by, let me clear this up for you. I mean, Hillary won, you lost, period. That's no reason to take this out on me, okay? I mean, I'm not going to be some sort of pervert. No. I'm not a pervert. Do you understand? I'm not going to do what you're going to say, all right? Everybody knows, even Ghost would say that you're a piece of trash. I mean, Bernie Sanders calling up here tonight. I mean, really? I mean, a freaking socialist calling here tonight? Oh, my gosh. I don't know any president or first lady that happened to be a socialist, but I do know that Eleanor Roosevelt's husband, President FDR, can be a closet communist since he's supported a freaking social program. Alright? I mean, whether it's a rumor or whether it's some scholarly opinion or fact, you decide for yourself, but I'm just not going to go there for now. Anyways, alright. Let's see, we got only one caller here. Give us a call if you want to discuss anything about presidents, wives, first ladies, the interview. This is a Taco Tuesday broadcast. It's not exactly Baller Friday. So, I mean, give me a call. Let's see what you want to discuss. First ladies or politics? I mean, I'm open for now. And you'll have to call up soon other than the 973 caller. All right. 40 seconds or less, you got that amount of time to decide. Because I covered what I needed to cover tonight. And I could go on and on about the theme of partnership, all right? I could talk about Nancy Reagan if I have to, you know, as an example. I think I made my point here. Now, it's 15 seconds. 10 seconds. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Cortana or Siri. And we're in the after show, ladies and gentlemen. It's happening. Oh, man. We only got one caller? Jesus Christ, man. We don't get a lot of trolls, and this is the only caller who is known to be a troll. So, 15 minutes left. Okay. We got 15 minutes left on the broadcast. So let me go check the chat room here. the show is staring at me. Oh, well, that's all right. This is awkward to some degree. All right. Okay, you see, this is why that I had to prepare ahead of time. It's because I got the materials needed in order to discuss this particular part of the programming. But, you know what? It's not like everybody gives a crap about first ladies. I mean, if that's the case, I assume that the reason is because they may be stuck in the past, where they just bought into the assumption that, well, first ladies are trivial. That's not the way I think. Any topic is important to me, all right? Any topic whatsoever. How do you think I get into an interdisciplinary studies program? Because I want to learn. And to learn, you might have to learn about everything as though you're in liberal arts or liberal education. Not exactly in the political discourse, whether in America or in Europe, but somewhat like you're free to explore things. Like even be in somebody's shoes. Now, not many first ladies, or maybe most first ladies, would care about others other than themselves, while some just have the dark side of, hey, I want this neat, beautiful dress, or this beautiful house. I got to redecorate the White House since we're renovating it, or to some capacity. I mean, really, now. Of course, that I could talk about Nancy Reagan and her dress, but that's when I'm going to discuss that in an article by Professor Benz, who wrote a scholarly article about Nancy Reagan. All right. Okay. This is internet vandalism, or should I say, or go say, radio graffiti. This is a part of the broadcast in which the spectators become part of a spectacle. All right. This is the after show, so you can't call in. But if you're on queue, then when I call up your number or area code, you got exactly 3 to 4 seconds to say whatever it is that's on your mind. Why do you think this is called Radio Graffiti, huh? Anyways, we got only one caller on the queue, and I'm not sure if I could continue calling with this guy. So, let's try, shall we? I bet it's freaking Bernie Sanders. Yeah, feel the burn! Anyways, 973, read your graffiti.
You know that, I want to see your toolbox. After all, I mean, you must first, you must take off your underwears and hop around and come in onto Bernie. You want it, you know, you want it.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that, all right? Oh, man, Bernie Sanders has got problems, man. Yeah, man. You know something? If Bernie Sanders was elected other than Donald Trump, then we may see not only a socialist president, but I wonder if his potential first lady is going to be a socialist right beside him. I mean, you're talking about the longest-serving independent in U.S. congressional history. Since his election in the House of Representatives in 1991, he caucused with the Democratic Party, which has entitled him to congressional committee assignments, and at times given Democrats the majority, all right? And, of course, his political viewpoints. Did you know he graduated from University of Chicago with a Bachelor's of Arts? And he majors in politics? Huh. That's interesting. I heard that summer before. Now, his wife right now is Jane O'Meara, or Jane Sanders. It used to be Deborah Schilling, or Deborah Sanders, until they divorced in 1966. That was during the Cold War era. Now, let's see, if there was a first lady called Jane Sanders, then don't you think that would be like American social worker, college administrator, and political staffer? I mean, she used to be a provost interim president of Goddard College from 1996 to 1997. and president of Burlington College from 2004 to 2011. Oh my gosh. And you see, she's one of those ladies that married to presidential candidates, all right? She's a college graduate, and she can be called Dr. Sanders because she earned a doctorate in 1996 in leadership studies in politics and education from the Union Institute and University. Well, I tell you, she was born in and grew up in New York City's borough of Brooklyn. That's one of five children, all right? Raised Catholic and attended Catholic schools before attending the University of Tennessee at Knoxville. But she dropped out of Tennessee and moved to Brooklyn with her first husband, David Driscoll. All right? That's according to Bloomberg.com, all right? Now, they moved to Virginia. In 1975, they moved to Vermont when Driscoll's employer, IBM, transferred. Sanders has three children from her marriage with Driscoll. College graduate, married to a presidential candidate who ripped off all his contributors and was beaten by the Hillary supporters. I mean, I feel sorry for him. They shouldn't have beaten him like that. But he should have just campaigned a little better and get, like, foreknowledge, insights, or whatever, and be better prepared, even in his age. Because politics change over time, and it's not going to be an easy game, right? It's not a game, actually. It's life or death, according to Ghost, all right? It can't be compared to football, although you can choose your team. And you get to choose your quarterback or your candidate. So, now, of course, that's a weak analogy at this point. It can be strong, depending on the weight of the evidence here. Now, this is like, if she's fiscally responsible, Jane Sanders, likely her cause would be for education. All right? That's something that Nancy Reagan, I think she cares about education, as well as getting children off drugs. You know, the Just Say No campaign. You know, Bernie Sanders has described his wife as one of his key advisors, and he has employed her at various times as an administrative assistant, spokeswoman, policy advisor, chief of staff, and media buyer. Now, according to a 1996 article in the Washington Post, she was credited with helping him draft more than 50 pieces of legislation. She has served in Sanders' congressional office as chief of staff and as policy and press advisor, and also serves as an alternate commissioner for the Texas Low-Level Radioactive Waste Disposal Compact Commission, a group of people who will decide on where the waste should go and which location. After leaving Burlington College presidency, Mrs. Sanders became a member of a Vermont Economic Development Authority. Well, let me tell you something, folks. If the Bernie Sanders was president and that Mrs. Sanders is like first lady of the White House, then you're seeing a lot more than just black people being too dependent on government welfare, you know, the tax dollars. You know, I'm not joking, all right? And of course, people can define socialism in different ways, but as far as I understand about it, it may refer to forms of public, collective, or cooperative ownership, to citizen ownership of equity, or to any combination of these. In other words, the markets and the government both have a role to play in the economy. Now, let's see if we can call up on Bernie Sanders again. Bernie, you're on the air.
Oh, that's true. You know, there's people coming in the chat room lately. You know, they must take my underwear and show it around the internet. And so you're right about the First Lady. I must go in my bedroom and watch the Golden Girls, you know?
I hear you, Bernie. I hear you. Yeah. Of course. Thank you, Bernie. I forgot about the chat room. Sorry about that. Oh, man. We got 5 minutes into the broadcast, so I'm going to wrap this up by going to shout-outs. The way this works, if you come into the chat room, like log in through blogtalkradio.com and participate in this chat room while listening to the broadcast, and if I see your name, I'll give you a shout-out. Now, let's see what we got here. We got a future show in place. We got the bristle butt for First Lady. Oh, my gosh. We got bronies for camps. What the heck is that supposed to mean? What the heck is that supposed to mean? Bronies for camps. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a fat joke. Let's see. Butt stalker on ice. Jesus Christ, man. Jesus Christ. We got, how am I going to say that? Jesus Christ. What else we got here? Jacob Bernie Undies. Shove it up your ass. All right? Jesus Christ. No. I'm not going to do the thing, all right, with Bernie Sanders, you sick son of a bitch. You know what? Give me the mic. Give me the gosh dang mic. Anyways, getting back to the chat room here, we got Dr. Bristle is a tard. Don't call my pony OC that, all right? He's smarter than you think. Believe me. He's smarter than an average pony. I can guarantee gosh dang to you. Maybe more in the lines of Doctor Who or above. Who knows? Anyways, we got Jews First, Christians Next. Shut up. Jeez. Well, you may have a point like that persecution happens because Christians in him, you know, Jesus Christ. Yada, yada, yada. Anyways. We got Thai blue for Jacob. Freaking Thai blue? You mean that freaking fruit? Anyways, we got... Oh, Jesus Christ. Sorrel's Empire for Bristle and Sorrel's owns Jacob O.C. You son of a... But screw George Sorrel's, damn it. That's the Prince of Freaking Darkness, for Christ's sake, man. He's the one who's funding the whole Women's March protest in Washington, D.C. I mean, that's sick. It's disgusting. Test makes women look bad. It strains gender relations. And it also stains them, all right? No pun intended, and don't get Bernie Sanders involved in this crap. I mean, Jesus Christ. Give me the mic. That's all the shout-outs I got for tonight. Oh, man. I got to wrap up here. I'll be back same place, same time, 10 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. Central Standard Time. Next broadcast will probably be about a scholarly article from a professor and the area of politics. They're talking about Nancy Reagan and all that. Make sure to spread the word of Real Talk and stay tuned for more content on from Eddie Hinkle or me. Good night, everybody. And I'll talk to you all next time. I'm out of here. Good night.